the sky. The you and I, the sea, the sky, the you and I. I know we're all blues, all shades, all hues, all blues. Some blues are sad, but some are glad. Dark, sad, or bright, glad. They're all blues, all shades, all hues, all blues. A color,
oh, one of my favorite singers, Ernestine Anderson, with All Blues. That's with Miles Davis's All Blues. This is from her album Big City, which she recorded in 1983. See, when you do something really well, the years don't matter. See, that's why I like going back to the old stuff. When they did things to best way. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And we'll try to make some sense of our world today, which isn't making very much sense at all. We have, did I tell you we have another so-called debate going on? I was trying not to say it. Try not to turn you off this early in the game, but yes, there'll be another Democratic presidential debate. We call it, in these parts, a Q&A, question and answer session, in South Carolina tonight, which will include candidates who didn't appear in Nevada or who were only recently cleared to participate in South Carolina's Q&A session. For many, tonight will be the second time in a week that they're squaring off against adversaries, but that doesn't necessarily mean they'll do better than they did the last time. It's the final face-off before the state's primary on February the 29th. And before Super Tuesday, March the 3rd, when 14 states and one territory officially kick off voting in the 2020 presidential race. By then, would the candidates and the contest change what it means to be a Democrat? That's a big question. And we should be tackling that today. Because the way things are going, we're not sure what a Democrat is anymore. They're running against each other and they have positions on things and whatnot. But you would notice that lost in the sauce is the very basic question. Who and what is a Democrat anymore? And now we have many changes to the notion itself, because people who not too long ago would never have been considered candidates for the party or of the party are now, you know, they've dyed in the wool Democrats. We have two billionaires, two, not one. Two. We have Tom Steyer and we have Michael Bloomberg. Not too long ago, they would not have been considered Democrats or even eligible to be Democrats because their whole philosophy would have pertain to something else, a different way of thinking. It would not have reflected the old standard democratic sensibility. But now, Bloomberg rented a room in the Democratic Party and immediately was given a lease. Why? Because, well, it's a lot of money. He's got a lot of money. And the leadership of the Democratic Party thought it was going to be a really good thing to have him on board. He's not asking the party for anything. He's financing his own way. And so he has decided in some cases not to participate in these Q&A sessions. And as we saw last week, for the first time, he said, okay, I'll come join you. And it didn't go so well for him. So we have this strange place that we're occupying psychologically. Those of us who have been observing the Democratic Party for years, and perhaps those who have been in the party itself for so many years, it's hard to describe what it is now. It's hard to describe its philosophy. It's hard to describe where it is going with this new membership, taking on new dimension, and frankly, in a disturbing way, in which people in the party are not asked what they think about it. You know, Steyer was just brought on, and Michael Bloomberg was just given his room. And it seems as if the hierarchy of the party is saying to everybody else, look, the decision was made, deal with it, live with it, move on. And then we saw, especially in the last session, the last Q&A session, we saw that, we saw evidence of a party that has been, you know, fractured. It didn't seem to have a cogent story to tell. It didn't seem to have a philosophy as to what people could expect of this party, really. Because everybody was telling a different story. Everybody was defending a different aspect of their own individual agenda. I remarked about it, that it was very disconcerting to watch 2 hours of television purportedly around the question of the Democratic Party and its ideals, what it hopes to accomplish, et cetera, et cetera. And instead we saw a brawl. I reminded you that this wasn't rugged individualism, it was ragged individualism. They couldn't have done a worse job of communicating to would-be voters what the vested interest is in supporting the Democratic Party. So let's tackle this one question first, and then we could get on to other things. What is it that the Democratic Party will be telling people that it stands for on the cusp of Super Tuesday and on the cusp of yet another statewide election that will determine who wins the state? What is the Democratic Party, you think? What would it be saying? Well, I just said that the party comes across as being fractured. not everybody's telling the same story. Not everybody is even suggesting that they're on the same team. So what might we see tonight in terms of messaging? What is the Democratic Party messaging at this point? Why should people bother with it? Why should people vote for Democratic candidates? What is the message? How has the Democratic Party basically changed? That's what I'm hoping you can help us understand today as we go into this very critical period of party politics and election politics. 14 states on March the 3rd start the process working. That's not too long from now. You would think there would be some kind of agreement as to what the party stands for. What is it asking people to support? Are you aware? Do you know? Or am I just being a stick in the mud? That this is an essential thing to have figured out by now so that you can communicate it to voters and hopefully it resonates with them. But at this point, on the cusp of Super Tuesday, and there isn't, at least you don't get the feeling that the party has congealed in terms of its messaging, what it wants the public, the voting public, to understand. Okay, Henry from Chicago, you get us started today.
Hey, Trees, how's it going?
Okay, how's by you?
It's going okay. I'm supposed to be getting some snow over here, so.
Oh, wow.
Just racing for the snow.
Cold.
Yeah. I think the message that the Democratic Party now is trying to convey to the public is basically that Donald Trump needs to be defeated at all costs. And I guess they want the public to focus on is who is the best person within this party that can beat him. Nothing about issues, nothing about, you know, what can we do for the people, just who's going to be Donald Trump. I mean, that's all I kind of see out of this charade that's going on with the so-called debates.
Okay, so who's asking the question and who's giving, to your mind, the most plausible answer so far?
Like, who's asking the question out of the candidates?
Let's do that. Let's say who's asking the question of the candidates.
Okay, about who can beat Donald Trump?
And which of the candidates seems to be able to deliver the most plausible answer so far?
I think most of them, in particular, like Elizabeth Warren, who else? Maybe Joe Biden. They're the main ones that are kind of answering. Oh yeah, and Bernie Sanders are kind of answering or asking the question of who can beat Donald Trump. But I remember in the last, you know, so-called debate or Q&A that the consensus was that Bloomberg was not the guy, and matter of fact, they were comparing Bloomberg to Donald Trump. So that turned out to be a mess. But I think the ones that I mentioned are the ones basically directing or asking that question about who's the best person. And Bloomberg himself, in his commercials, is touting how he can, he's the only one that can beat Donald Trump.
But since we last talked last week, Biden has taken a hit. He swears he's on the comeback and that he'll be the guy to emerge as the winner of this mm-hmm. debate. You think so?
I think he might be winning South Carolina. From my understanding, he has a strong base, in particular with the black community there in South Carolina. I got a feeling he'll probably either be close to first, or he might end up winning it. So even though he's taken a huge hit in these other states, I got a prediction. I might be wrong, but I just got a feeling he's gonna win this one.
Huh. You look forward to him winning?
No, not at all.
Why don't you look forward to him winning?
Well,
such a nice man.
Joe, I mean, if you like the Obama story, yeah, he is a nice man, but if you look beyond that, he's about as bad as Donald Trump, except he says it in a nicer way.
Wow. That's really different from what they're broadcasting about Joe Biden and what Joe Biden is saying about himself. It is in South Carolina that you could see all these dimensions to Joe Biden that people are quick to dismiss, and what an important asset he is to the party. Well, we'll see.
Yep.
Thanks for getting us started. Thanks for getting us started, Henry. Good to hear from you. 888-874-4888. Another so-called debate is on for tonight, and it happens to be on the cusp of the primary, and these are no ordinary primaries. This is the Big Tuesday. Big contest in which 14 states will be participating at the same time. So you'll have a lot of activity going on there. The question we are dealing with here is that in as much as the party has come this far and this close to this particular period in the political contest, is it telling a story that you think people would be listening to? Will people who will be voting, will they be remembering the story, or are they still operating on the basis of, I can't take another 4 years of Trump, no matter how bad the Democratic Party is? What are your thoughts? Ma'at, you're on the air.
Yes, greetings to the beloved family. First of all, a point of clarification. Bloomberg didn't make the decision not to participate in prior Q&A/debates. He was excluded because of their rules, which were you had to have not just certain polling numbers, but you had to have a certain number of small donations. The Democrats, the elite Democrats versus the Justice Democrats, they decided to change the rules on his behalf. So when the people of color couldn't meet those goals, they didn't change the rules. And then when Bloomberg stepped up, they decided to change the rules and make a way for him to have that disastrous performance that I didn't get to see. I heard clips. Now, let me clarify what exactly your question is, as I was trying to get through on the line.
Oh, you're going to do it, or you want me to do it?
No, I'm asking to clarify your question, because I was calling in.
Well, here we are, and it's now, we are at the cusp of the real thing. You know, the contest officially will begin. But are we clear what the Democratic Party stands for? have the candidates really taken the time to explain to us why we have a vested interest in electing maybe not specific individuals, but certainly the party as a party. Are you sufficiently clear that the party as a party has an agenda that you understand and accept?
Well, I make a distinction between the establishment Democrats and what Danny Sheehan has called the Justice Democrats, such as Alexandria and the Squad. So I would have to say that the establishment Democrats, they have an agenda that's just like when they had the agenda with Hillary Clinton. They didn't have any understanding that since 1980, people were sick of either a Bush or a Clinton that was the one that was going to be in office. They didn't see that coming, nor do they seem to process that the reason why someone like Donald Trump was able to finagle his place into the presidency was because people are tired of the same old, same old. And Utrice, as an example, let's look at Biden and who that guy really is. Recently came out a documentary called Worth the Price? Where it shows that he led the charge as a Democrat upholding Bush's push to invade, kill a million plus people, displace another million plus people, and his trumpeting and bringing on board people to support the disastrous Iraq war. We know he helped to form that crime bill. And so people just have had it with these establishment types, and that's why Donald Trump got in place. And this is what they're not seeing with how they're putting down Bernie Sanders. I don't know if you've been following this, but they've even compared somehow his candidacy to Vichy France. Now, how they make that connection when he lost most of his family during the Nazi era in Germany, it just makes no sense. And they don't understand that people do want universal health care like the rest of the advanced and developed world, child care and everything else, so that capitalism is not just totally rapacious.
So, is the Democratic Party power elite? Is it friendly toward Sanders? Is it happy to see the party stretch out in these many ways to accommodate all the interests of a wide swath? Or how is the party resonating right now?
Well, indeed, the establishment elite Democrats, they did similar things in 2016 toward Bernie Sanders, because I remember voting for him in the primary, and they just, you know, the super delegates and some of that I understand has changed, but they did not support him. They pushed him aside, and they gave us a losing candidate that they should have predicted. Because people would, these dynasties of either the Bushes or the Clintons, people see through that, they're sick of that, and they want something that's more uplifting and inclusive.
All right, well, you put your two cents in today. Thanks so much for calling in.
Thank you.
Patricia from New York, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Utrice, and good afternoon to the PRN family.
Thank you. Good afternoon to you.
This is a fight to retain the status quo that has not benefited any black or brown person as long as I can remember. And that's what the fight is all about. It's not even Bernie. Bernie is the personification of everything that they are against. This is not about what is in the best interest of people. It's what's in the best interest of the party retaining their power and retaining the status quo. I mean, you know, black and brown people, they're flocked to the party, and if the party was producing for us, then why are we in the condition that we're in? I keep asking people that all the time. If they have produced for you, why are you working four jobs just to keep a roof over your head? Why? Now, the problem that they're going to have, you know, the message is that if Bernie Sanders, who I don't have a dog in this fight, but clearly the system is designed to make certain that he is not the nominee. And everybody keeps asking, well, if he's at the top of the ticket, it's going to make it bad for everybody, for all the people at the bottom of the ticket. And they keep talking about Latinos and the Cubans in Florida. Well, as somebody who's been to Cuba not once, not twice, but three times, the very things that people want in this country is what you see in Cuba. Free education through professional schools. If you want to go to medical school in Cuba, you don't pay. If you want to go to nursing school in Cuba, you don't pay. If you want to be a teacher, you don't pay. Universal free health care. You don't even need an insurance card. You just go to your provider, you go to the hospital. And these are things that I saw firsthand. On one of the trips, one of the people in our group got sick and had to be taken to the hospital. They knew we were Americans. They didn't ask us for a dime. They took care of that person and sent that person back to us well. So people don't know what they're talking about. Those Cubans that you see in Florida that everybody is so concerned about in the Democratic Party, when you go to Cuba, you see how they were living large in Cuba, how they were oppressing the black and brown people in Cuba. People don't know what they're talking about.
So what would your position be as of tonight when this new Q&A session takes place?
I probably won't even watch it because I know what they're going to say. I mean, what can they say? They're not talking truth. They're talking expediency. But I guess I will watch it.
Okay. Thanks, Patricia, for your call today.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take this little break, come back right after it, and continue.
A summer day that's fair, a prayer that's prayed, a lament that's made. The blues is more than a color, they're the moan of pain and a taste of strife and a shared refrain. Which life is playing. Blues can be the living dues we're all a paying. Yeah, oh Lord.
You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. We're talking about, well, this Q&A session that is to be held tonight. And we have major voting going on very soon. After that, on March the 3rd, when 14 states and one territory begin the formal process of casting their votes. But the question we're dealing with is, what is the Democratic Party saying about itself? What is the encouragement that it is giving us to cast our fate with that? That's the question. 888-874-4888. E from Edgewater, you're on the air.
Greetings to you and the PRN family.
Thank you very much. To you too.
Thank you. You know, I don't even think it's a Q&A session. I think it's more a rank-out session, like me and my friends used to do to each other when we were 12 and 13 years old, like little idiots. And it's a rank-out session. They're out-ranking each other. Anyway, I think what Patricia and a lot of us, most of us, aren't taking into consideration, it's easy to have a socialist system when you're only dealing with maybe 20 million people. But here we have 350 million people. If you had a socialist system here with 350 million, it would be like insane. There's too many people. Here in Canada, you got to wait online for like days and days to get to see a doctor because they have that kind of system there in Canada. But here, I don't think it could possibly work.
But I'm not under the impression that that is true. I have been myself to Canada. And it's quite an efficient system, and way cheaper, very effective, and it's working.
Well, I'm only going by what I've heard on PRN from other hosts and other guests that they said it's very hard to you have to a long wait to get to see a doctor because of the way the system is set up there. But I don't know if that's a consideration or not. I still think it would be very hard to have that kind of a system where there's so many people in a country. It's Norway,
but
what do they got, 25 million,
30
million people?
What do you understand, because everybody is beating up poor Bernie Sanders about describing himself as a democratic socialist, what about the word socialist that scares you or upsets you?
Doesn't scare me at all. In fact, I would hope we could have a socialist system. I just don't think it's possible because of sheer numbers of people. And maybe we should take care of ourselves better and that we don't need to go to the doctor so much. And, you know, Gary Null's been telling us things to do to make our immune system stronger for the last 40 years, but we just can't get it through our heads. So, you know, elderberry, astragalus, red clover, all these herbs were given to us by God for the healing of the nations. That's what it says in the Bible. We should be taking more initiative ourselves about our health
at that level. But I'm asking, how does that equate to a formalized system of government and what that system ought to be doing?
I'm sorry. I didn't get the whole gist of that of the question.
It's all well and good for people to say, okay, take care of yourself and so forth. And there are many, many, in fact, I'm a beneficiary of such thinking. But that is not what we're talking about. We're talking about a formalized system of governance that envisions a healthcare delivery system functioning very differently from what we have now. And people, because of the word socialism or socialist, automatically turn off without even knowing what it is, without even wondering whether it might be a better system than what exists now.
Because I think it would take a great effort to change the system that we have now into something else.
So it takes a great effort. Aren't we worth a great effort?
Yes, but we're not the powers in charge. We're not the ones that are in charge of this capitalistic system, this corrupt system that is in charge. We're not the ones in charge. If what I want, what you want, what Tony from Orlando wants, it's not our choice. We gotta live in this world of what we're given by the powers that be. And fortunately, they like this kind of a system because they all want to be rich. So a few individuals get to live in the lap of luxury. Everybody else has to suffer. And that's what we've been dealing with for the last 2,000 years, and it don't look like it's going to change anytime soon.
Well, that's primarily because we don't insist that it change. Thank you so much for calling in today, E. Thanks for contributing. Gwen from New York, you're on the air.
Okay, I want to say, Mr. E, I completely disagree. Rhyme it. I'm sorry. I cannot believe how people are willing to just roll over for some people that want something else. I don't think it's the way he said. I do think this is one of the most exciting races I've ever seen. I can't wait to go and watch Bernie on TV tonight. And when I hear him speak, I am so impressed with him. I'm so impressed with his sense of humor about himself, that he can laugh at himself, that he's so down to earth, and he seems to have a great plan. But I want to say, this is not the first socialist president we shall have. President Roosevelt, who was supposed to be the best president this country ever had, was your first president who gave you socialism. And yes, it was hard. It was hard, but it was so worth it. My parents would never have had the life they had if there was not President Roosevelt. And I think that we owe it to ourselves and to our children and our future to get this man in office. And about the Democratic Party, I think that was the original question, was what is happening to the Democratic Party?
Yes. Thank
you know,
you
Utrecht.
Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Well, when you asked about the Democratic Party, you know how some people say I have to, like, hold my nose and go vote? Well, I have to hold my nose and go run for public office on the Democratic ticket because they stink in so many ways, and they hate my guts, all right? But I still lean more in their direction than I do in the other direction. So, you know, there's really just basically two parties. You cannot win on the Green Party in New York City, and I wish you could, but that I don't think is going to happen for quite a long time. But the point is that I think Bernie Sanders' people, and I spoke, I was on a call with them last night, have a vision, a very deep vision of changing the party from within, and it looks like they're doing it. And there are thousands and thousands of people that are on this journey, and they're doing things. You know, the most exciting thing that I had when I was working on the campaign was the independent part of being able to kind of create what I wanted to kind of put out there to people in the way I wanted to do it. You know, so I wrote like a newsletter and put it out. But I think that it's really exciting because it really is an us project. It's not just a project of one person who's going to run and be in the dominant force. Bernie gives everybody a chance to step up to the plate and take a piece. So there's skin in the game. I have skin in the game, and many other people have skin in the game. And the one thing that always hurts me is when I hear my own people, progressive people, that are so unbelievably negative that they're throwing themselves in the coffin before we even start. There is hope ahead of us. There is a future ahead of us, and Bernie will be the first light that we've had in a long time. Only the first one. I believe that after he's in office that you're going to start to see a lot more come forth after this. But it can't happen if we come to the table with such negativity. I mean, I'm so sorry, but
Would you agree that the Democratic Party appears to be openly hostile to Bernie Sanders?
Absolutely, 100%. They despise him, and they despise me, and they're cruel and they're mean. I remember every single debate I went to when I ran for the public advocate's office. The Democratic Party would not let me speak, and yet I was registered properly. I had money in the bank. Every single time, I was not allowed to speak. So absolutely, they do. I know. I know why, because I wrote a letter about Hillary Clinton. I wrote about her creating that crime bill. And I asked people that lived in the projects, is this really who you want to go for? Is this what you really want to do? And I think that got a lot of people's feathers ruffled. But, you know, that is the truth. And that is why I could not vote for her, because I could not go along with that. It's been so damaging for this country. So I couldn't go with that mindset. I myself voted for Jill Sanders. And, you know, I wouldn't vote for Trump, but that's what I did. But I do want to tell you that I think the Democratic Party is splitting in half. And I think it's okay, because we need to do that in order to grow and to evolve in the future. So I'm okay with that. And we're going to, there, half of us are for the Roosevelt section and the other half want to be Bloomberg's. But if you're a Bloomberg, to me, you're not a true Democrat.
Okay. She has spoken. Thank you, Gwen, for calling in and contributing today. Ed from Jamaica, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello. Yes, Ed, you're on the air.
You can hear me? How are you doing, Yatrice?
Okay, thanks. How are you?
You know, me and my thumbs, hanging on, hanging in and hanging on. Always trying to gain a footing. As far as you keep on mentioning the Democratic Party, you know, I got to disagree with you as far as giving them any type of relevance, because they no longer exist in my mind. I mean, party politics in this country is gone. And basically, you just got two sides of the same coin. They both serve the same corporate wealthy masters. They both have the same objectives, even though they try to put a different spin on them. But they both want to maintain power and establish the status quo. That's why they're so against Bernie. A lot of people talk about Roosevelt and all the things he did. What people don't realize is Roosevelt was from the elite class. He came from the line of Theodore Roosevelt and same line that elite class came from. And the only reason he did what he did was because of A. Philip Randolph, of Samuel Gompers, of the rising labor tide at that time and the rising middle-class tide at that time that threatened this country's hierarchy. And they were forced to give us Social Security. He was forced to do the New Deal. He was forced because people were impoverished, the Great Depression. History is not taught well in this country. They don't know about how the World War I veterans came with their M1 rifles and occupied the Great Lawn. They don't know about the women dying in the street and the song, Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? This country was on the verge of social change. The Socialist Party, the Communist Party, they had a real presence during that time. And to satiate the people, the powers that be said, listen, we got to give them something, else we ain't going to have anything. And that's how labor leaders, that's how social change leaders came at the government. And that's how we got to come at the government now. You can elect Bernie Sanders, but as I said yesterday, unless he's got the backing of the House of Representatives, of the Senate, he's not going to be able to do anything. He can make a few executive orders, and they'll change him. And Trump doesn't have all that power, but Trump is maintaining the status quo. Trump is putting through judges that are going to control the laws in this country well into the future. Trump is passing, has the assistance of the House of Representatives and the House of Senate. All of the bills that he wanted to pass got passed. So, I mean, unless we get a consensus of force on this government by the common people, it doesn't matter who's sitting in the White House. It isn't the person.
So how is the Democratic Party how will it explain itself to would-be voters? And how would it communicate that voters have a vested interest in voting for the Democrats as opposed to any other group?
They can't. I mean, they can say whatever they want to say, but if you're looking at it with a clinical eye and you've got a modicum of intelligence, they're lying. I mean, you can't explain. I mean, you can lie all you want, but the truth is the truth. You know, tell the truth, shame the devil. And they can lie all they want, but it's obvious by their actions that they are not for the people. They are for themselves. And as long as that manifests, the Democratic Party is just as bad as the Republican Party. They're two sides of the same coin, ladies and gentlemen.
So when people are participating in these primaries and in Super Tuesday, are they kind of going against themselves? Is that what they're saying?
Well, you don't have an option. You don't have a viable option, or people don't believe there's a viable option. They don't want to make the necessary investments to create a viable option, be it a third party, be it a different line of thinking. I mean, the greatest example people are really not having paid attention to is the Tea Party, how they manifested, how they developed. They started hyper-locally. They took over local offices. They took over governorships. They took over mayorties. They changed voting districts. They controlled the mechanisms. You've got to control the mechanisms of the system if you want to get any satisfaction from it. And that's what they did. And that's why we're in, partly why we're in the state we're in now. They learned how to control the mechanism. If you can gerrymand your district, you can put whoever you want to put in there. It's a numbers game. That's what people don't realize. It's all a political. This system is a political numbers game with the Electoral College, with super delegates and all this. It's a numbers game. And if you get hyperlocal and create your district the way you want to create it, you'll have the power to say, hey, we've got a voting block here and we can get you in. That's what. As long as this system, this is how this system manifests itself, this is the only way to deal with it productively.
Thanks for calling in and contributing. Thank you.
Thank you.
888-874-4888. We still have time for about a couple more calls. I was wondering about this question for quite some time because the Democratic Party seems to have enmeshed itself in its own conundrum. They don't know what to do. Where to go? They have no delineated program. They have no way of telling people, these are our main concerns, these are the things that we'll be fighting for, and we need your help. We need you to back us up. What we do see is confusion. We see a lot of, you know, concentration on individual programs and what it is a person wants to achieve and accomplish. But like I said the last time, you don't even get the sense they like the party anymore. They're there because, well, it's better than the next best thing. There is no next best thing at the moment. They could at least look forward to using the Democratic Party to their advantage to achieve elections. But I don't know that the Democratic Party has a good feeling among the people right now. And worse is that I don't think the party is showing that it actually cares. It's not communicating that it is in its best interest when people come together. They're not doing enough to bring people together under shared objectives and goals. They're not expressing enough solidarity with the people. They're very much into their own world, and, you know, they leave the rest up to us. The people are the ones who would deliver victory, not the party. The people will deliver victory wherever they can. And that's a sad state of affairs. You're not going to win long term with that kind of attitude or mindset. The leadership of the party is out of touch, and it's out of sync with how society is evolving. What concerns the people? What are the bread and butter issues that they should be dealing with? I don't get the sense that it matters that these things are high priority things that they ought to concern themselves with as a party. It's too sad that we're not seeing that kind of, that doesn't mean that they're not doing it. It's just that we're not feeling it. We're not seeing it. We're not seeing actions that reflect that. In this last quarter, We saw Andrew Yang give up. We saw Cory Booker earlier than that, and Harris give up and just say, well, I can't go any further. But you know what they were saying. They didn't say it out loud because they don't want to cause dissension and they don't want to cause any kind of schisms, any more schisms than exist already in the party. But you can't help but think that the party still does not recognize the loss it sustained when these people got so dejected and so they got so depressed about where the party is, and the party is not helping. It's not helping candidates. It's not creating people who can replace them. It's actually functioning in a very dysfunctional way. But to me, that should have constituted a huge wake-up call, and it should have been the place where the party should have moved quickly to, you know, to breach, I mean, to mend the breach. Whatever you think about the individual candidates, the fact is each of them had potential. Each of them had already contributed. Each of them could have continued in that vein if the party supported them. The party took pains to distance itself from these candidates. And I think the loss was tremendous. The party is not growing its own talent. And yet the talent that mustered up the courage to say, okay, let me give it a try, they were competent. They had something to contribute. But the party showed no incentive, no interest in bringing them along. And I thought that it was such a waste and such a tragedy that you could have people come into a party with the intention of contributing at a very high level, with the right energy, the right attitude, and with the right vision. Sure, which new candidate can't use some help? But to just operate as if you don't even want to be associated with them, and you don't want them necessarily associated with you. What a rotten attitude. What a rotten attitude. So I'm hoping that we could see a change at that level. It's a very basic level, but it is a kind of a basic organizational level. When people get really rooted and oriented correctly, and they feel that they're part of something, then they act that way. And they get a whole new bunch of people energized. But this is not this party. These people act as if they're already dead. They just haven't laid down and closed their eyes. Well, that brings us to the end of our program today. I want to say this from the bottom of my heart. I really do appreciate everyone who calls in and contributes so meaningfully. It means that you're taking the program seriously and you are giving the best of yourself, and you're open to growing along with us. That's fantastic. It's a great compliment. And I am so thrilled to be in your company because of it. So we'll see each other tomorrow. Thanks for listening today and contributing. About to see in the sky, and I'm